Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The city of Sitka has a new municipal attorney. Robin Kuchak accepted the assembly's job offer last night. She'll start work no later than April 1st. Kuchak is a graduate of the Detroit College of Law at Michigan State University and has practiced in Alaska for more than 20 years. Her resume includes time in Barrow, where she was an assistant municipal attorney for about 18 months. She also worked for nearly 4 years as an assistant attorney general and assistant district attorney in Barrow. She and Sitka Tribe of Alaska staff attorney Alan Bell were both interviewed for the job by the assembly. They conducted the interviews Friday and then met again Sunday to discuss the candidates and vote to make an offer. Kuchak's salary will be just shy of $112,000. She takes over from Teresa Hillhouse, Sitka's municipal attorney, for more than 7 years. Hillhouse is leaving City Hall March 1st to take a job in Anchorage, the Anchorage Municipal Attorney's Office. Sitka's electric rates are going up effective July 1st. The flat 15% increase for all customers will put residential energy charges between 9 and 18 cents per kilowatt hour, depending on usage. The city is about to issue bonds to pay for the Blue Lake Dam expansion. In order to do that, it has to promise its lenders that it would raise a certain amount of money. The final approval of the rate change was one of several energy decisions the assembly made last night. It also purchased a critical piece of Blue Lake infrastructure. The apparatus known as a switchgear is expected to cost more than $700,000. Assembly members also agreed to pay the Forest Service $10,000 a year for the next decade. Because the city is eating up some Forest Service land by expanding Blue Lake, it has to compensate the federal government. The money is expected to be used to fertilize Readout Lake and improve sockeye salmon habitat. And the assembly agreed to hire SNS general contractors to blast away some rock near the city's Jarvis Street diesel power plant in order to make room for an expansion there. Instead of asking for direct payment, SNS is asking the assembly to make debt payments of about $107,000 on a quarry lease approved earlier this year. Chris Bruton runs the city's electric department.
We're getting this work done at a fraction of the cost that would cost if we went out for open bid. So, in effect, what we're doing is saving several hundred thousand dollars of our project funds by going this route.
The payments amount to just over $4 per cubic yard of rock removal. That compares to bids in place on the Blue Lake project that range between $100 and $4,200 per cubic yard, depending on the difficulty of the work. Assemblymember Mike Reif wanted to know why the rock removal contract wasn't put out for bid.
Why wouldn't another contractor look at that rock sitting there on the hillside saying, hey, I can remove that. I got some projects I can use it for. I can store it. Give me a chance to bid out. And I can do it fairly quick. Why aren't we providing that opportunity to other contractors?
I'd say based on the fact that we have firm prices for rock removal at a large project underway at various locations, a remote site where it's safer and in a critical site where there's critical infrastructure nearby, we have firm prices in hand, and we know what we're paying for the Blue Lake project. You look at what the cost of this is going to be relative to those prices, and it's 1,000 times less. So there's no doubt in my mind that if we go out for bid, that the only thing that's going to happen is just going to be an increased cost.
Municipal Attorney Teresa Hillhouse added to that. She said that the city charter requires the assembly solicit bids for work like this unless the assembly finds circumstances required special treatment. In this case, the city needs to move the rock quickly and already has a qualified contractor on hand. Bruton called it, quote, a rare confluence of events. Sitka is not the only community investing in energy. Southeast leaders and electric utility managers want to increase regional collaboration on the development of new hydropower facilities and other energy resources. Many of them recently met for an energy summit of sorts in Petersburg. Matt Lichtenstein reports on some of the community's needs and the challenges.
Getting away from expensive diesel power, at least reducing the need for diesel, was the most common goal for everyone in the room, while the larger communities are already powered by cheaper and cleaner hydroelectric plants, a number of those towns are relying more and more on diesel to supplement growing electrical demand. Several of the smaller communities are completely dependent on diesel plants. The group of about 30 local, regional, state, and federal officials met for a three-hour roundtable at Petersburg's Fire Hall where they addressed several issues.
What is occurring in our communities? What loads do we see happening? and what continued analysis of resources is on the forefront to happen.
The facilitator was Robert Venables. He's the energy coordinator for the Southeast Conference, a regional advocacy group for businesses and communities, many of which were represented in the room. Venables reviewed some of the key findings from a recent state-sponsored planning effort on Southeast energy. One universal problem is the region's inability to store enough energy to meet peak demands in the wintertime when the water isn't flowing as much.
We kind of characterize Southeast Alaska as a Saudi Arabia of hydroelectric resources. Well, in the summertime, that's true. Run the rivers, we have seepage and leakage and everything occurring, water left and right.
Many at the table emphasized the need for more generation and called for regional cooperation on the development of a large hydro project and accompanying lines that could help power a substantial part of the panhandle. Mayor Mark Jensen suggested Southeast municipalities should work together for hydro development in Thomas Bay.
I mean, I know there's been talk for years of a grid all around Southeast. From there, if that would ever came into fruition, we'd be tied in from Greens Creek all the way to Metlakatla if they come across the water into Ketchikan.
Snettisham is the major hydro plant that powers Juneau, which is served by the privately owned Alaska Electric Light and Power Company. Municipal-owned utilities supply electricity to much of Southeast. That includes Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan, which govern the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. SEPA owns the two large hydro plants and connecting transmission lines that power those towns with some of the lowest rates in the state. Rather than building another big plant, Wrangell's recently retired mayor, Don McConaughey, suggested lots of smaller ones could be brought online sooner. Like Wrangell and Petersburg, Ketchikan is projecting a significant increase in the amount of diesel it's going to have to burn to supplement hydro and meet the growing demand over the next decade unless another significant source of hydropower is brought online. Dry weather has only made that worse in Ketchikan, which is planning for a new but small hydro project at nearby Whitman Lake. SEPA is also looking at raising the dam at its Swan Lake plant to generate more power. But even with both improvements online, Ketchikan officials expect they'll still have to burn a lot of diesel in the years to come. So the idea of collaborating on a bigger regional project appealed to City of Ketchikan Vice Mayor Bob Sievertson.
There's a lot of things, I think, that we have to work out as the communities. We have to get back on track and start working towards that common goal. We all understand we need another hydro project to get off the diesel. I think that's where our focus is going to be.
Juneau Mayor Merrill Sanford said the capital city was in the same boat. The situation has long been much more severe for the communities in Southeast that are entirely dependent on diesel. Communities like Angoon, Hoonah, and Cake, which continue to struggle with the high cost of electricity. The Village Native Corporation for Angoon, Kootsnuwu, has been working to develop a small hydro plant at Thayer Lake to offset the town's diesel use. Governor Sean Parnell approved $7 million for the project in last year's budget. Angoon Mayor Richard George pointed out that Thayer Lake has been in discussion for decades. He worried whether there would be enough funding to finally get it built. George said he was mainly at the meeting to encourage support for the proposed electrical intertie from Petersburg to Cake. A contractor for the U.S. Forest Service is preparing a draft environmental impact statement for the Cake-Petersburg intertie. That document's expected to come out sometime this spring. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
It's no secret that the high cost of energy in rural Alaska is a barrier to economic development and one of the primary reasons many residents are leaving village life behind. In some rural Southeast communities, electric bills are up to 275% higher than the national average, and some households spend as much as 50% of their income on home heating fuel. Experts say there's no magic bullet solution to the problem. So as KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, some communities are embracing a comprehensive approach.
With 800 homes in 12 communities, the nonprofit Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority is the largest provider of low and fixed income housing in Southeast Alaska. President and CEO Ricardo Worrell says the agency also is among the largest non-government consumers of electricity and heating fuel in the region.
The cost of heating alone for our organization consumes about one-third of our operating budget. So we're paying more than $1 million a year just to heat the homes that we do own and operate.
In 2011, CAKE officials asked the Housing Authority to sponsor a free energy education workshop in the community. The workshop touched on topics such as alternative energy, conservation, and Alaska's place in the global and national energy pictures. Gary Williams is executive director of the Organized Village of Cake. He says residents pay about 65 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity generated by burning diesel fuel at between $5.50 and $6 per gallon. The community has long desired a 40-mile electrical intertie with Petersburg, which is on less expensive hydropower. While that project is in the permitting stage, Williams says Cake has used workshops to focus on comprehensive energy solutions. That includes alternatives like wind and wood biomass, as well as conservation and weatherization.
That's been part of the mix and a very important one because it's probably perhaps the best bang for the buck to tighten up homes and just make your BTUs more effective.
As a result of Cake's energy workshops, the village was selected last year as one of five Alaska communities to participate in the Federal Department of Energy's START program. START stands for Strategic Technical Assistance Response Team, essentially experts who work with local communities on energy planning. In Cake, the START program helped improve an existing wind energy project. It also provided technical assistance for the installation of solar panels at the Cake Village office building. The agency will soon be trying out wood pellet heating systems at some of its properties in the village, thanks to a $500,000 grant from the Alaska Legislature last year. If successful, Worrell says it could be used in other communities and perhaps someday spark a wood pellet industry in rural Southeast. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or like to hear them again, visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW Sitka.